Okay, hello and welcome to another episode of the Faultline podcast, the audio companion to the weekly trade publication Analyzing Disruption in Media and Entertainment. In just a few hours from the time of recording this, I will be going into surgery. So to commemorate the occasion and subdue my nerves, I'm going to be putting another special guest under the scalpel. Someone who has been around the block a few times in video with management experience at Verimatrix, TiVo, and DivX, but has recently landed at a new venture. My name's Tommy Flanagan. I'm the editor of Faultline and your podcast host. And alongside me this week is Sebastian Braun, who is not, to my knowledge, associated with the world-famous German shaving product manufacturer, but he is SVP of Product Management at the front-end TV app software specialist, 24i. So, hallo, Sebastian. Wie geht es dir?
Hey. Thanks for having me, Tommy, and you're absolutely right. I am not related to the world-famous German shaving product manufacturer.
I like to get these nuances cleared up early on in the podcast in case we have any confused listeners. So, great to have you here, Sebastian. You know, it's tradition to do a little bit of a stalk on LinkedIn profiles before,
of course,
recording. And I noticed that it says you speak German, so I couldn't resist dropping that in. Unfortunately, that is the extent of my German, so we're going to have to cap it there. But so this is the second time that 24i has featured on the Faultline podcast, because last year we had your now former CEO, Dr. Neil Foster, in the hot seat, who obviously he can't return for a second bite of the cherry because he left in November 2023. Yeah, I'm assuming you've been just thrown into the deep end to steady the ship, I suppose. And did you listen to that episode? You know, have you done your homework out of curiosity?
I actually have not listened to that episode. I come in with fresh eyes, new thoughts, and we'll see where it goes. But I do know Neil, of course.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, you're very good at improvising. So
thank you. We have had that in our history. I know.
Yeah, we have indeed. So before we dive into the 24i product roadmap and dissect that, I am obliged to, ask you how the new role came about, why you made the new the switch at this time, after, seven successful years at Verimatrix, because we hear a lot about poaching in this industry. I love a good poaching story. So was this a poaching, or did you do it the old fashioned way and, with a CV?
It was, obviously I knew the team at 24i before, but it was not really, there's unfortunately not a juicy poaching story here. What there is, from my perspective, what sort of drove me to make that switch, as you know, we talked a lot in the past about piracy and so on and fighting that. And when I actually look at what's happening in the market today, you can actually check out a white paper that I just wrote a couple of weeks ago. Actually, last week maybe it was released. It's the way that piracy sort of brings an experience to consumers is, from my perspective, almost admirable, because they're solving some really big issues that consumers have in the market today. And when I looked at how do I continue to fight piracy, maybe in a less direct approach, but in a more experiential approach, I actually found that 24i was in a really good spot to make improvements there. And, as like 2023, we've talked, I don't know how many, if you have a count on how many times you've used the word super aggregation in 2023, or aggregation or something like that. That's kind of where I believe 24i is in a sweet spot. We can go about that, go deeper into that in a little bit, but that's really what drove me to make the switch. And then also some personal reasons that I'll talk to you over a beer at NAB, perhaps.
Definitely.
And as you noted, I actually am originally German and now back in the homeland, so to speak.
Excellent. Yeah, now that's become a bit of a running theme on in recent episodes, people saying, well, I'll give you this answer, but I'll give you the real answer over a beer in Las Vegas.
they're all real, there's always multiple reasons for things.
Yeah. So you've kind of you know, jumped almost to a question that I was going to save a bit later, but I'm going to jump into it now because, you know, I wanted to, you know, talk about the kind of overlap with your experience in product management in anti-piracy and, you know, whether that would translate over to the 24i product portfolio and whether you've identified gaps in that portfolio since arriving. And my thought was, oh, maybe application security is one, given that's your background, and, you know, sort of looking at how hackers are manipulating unsecured APIs to steal subscriber data. And you already touched on that. So is that what your experience is bringing to the 24i table? And then, you know, from that we can deduce that, you know, that's been a bit of an afterthought, maybe
a little bit, but I mean, obviously security and sort of the mm-hmm. platforms that 24i runs you know, are API driven, and API security in general is a big thing, whether you're running a video service or whatever you're running these days, especially in the cloud. If I go back a little bit further in my past, you know, I've actually been I think you called out DivX. We pride ourselves of having sort of been the ones that made actually video in a high quality standard shareable across the internet way back in the days when the internet was tiny little pipes. And then you also touched on TiVo, where I actually was running also product for some of the first connected EPGs and experiences, UX, that was actually delivered from a cloud platform. You know, when I think about what 24i brings to the table with regards, not necessarily directly to fight privacy, but it's really about the consumer, right? Why are they going there? Why are they checking that out? Because it's not necessarily because it's free, but in today's world, it's become a lot easier to do discovery, for example, on a site that aggregates all of the content. And we've sort of have been, as an industry, perhaps our worst enemy in that regard, because we've worked very hard to fragment the market and launch services all over the place. And, you know, you are a media consumer, I'm assuming. I'm a media consumer. I sometimes sit there on the couch at 8 o'clock and I like to call it discovery fatigue. I don't know if that word is cruising around, but essentially you're sitting there in front of 10 apps and nothing really talks to each other, you know, and it's actually becoming very difficult to find out, you know, what's going on right now. Have I missed a show? Where is that show or that movie or that live event or whatever it is? And so sort of from that perspective, I think we have a real big opportunity as an industry to come back together and actually tackle you know, unlicensed consumption of content by ways of providing convenience, you know, obviously underpinned by security. But I think convenience is something that is often underrated in terms of addressing, you know, unlicensed consumption.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I was recently at Connected TV World Summit in London. And yeah, those mm-hmm. themes were very central to a lot of the panels. And one that struck me was an executive at Eliza, the Estonian-Finnish operator, who said that in 3 or 5 years' time that they hope their TV looks more like TikTok, because she opens her phone and opens TikTok, and TikTok knows exactly what they want to watch. Turn your TV on, and it doesn't. And you spend a long time searching and browsing, and you know, these apps like TikTok, you just scroll and find something and scroll on to the next thing. So yeah, that's a real conundrum for a lot of you know, traditional TV types, operators, broadcasters, I think. And of course, 24i spent a lot of money. Well, I don't think it was ever made public how much money you spent on acquiring the filter, but that was kind of one of the big themes of our discussion with Neil last year and previous conversations about how 24i mm-hmm. has personalization at the core of what it does, and rivals don't, essentially. That was kind of in a nutshell. But 2 years on since that deal, you know, does that still ring true? Do customers see the value in 24i from the personalization stance, or, you know, is that still a real big problem? And, you know, these tools are becoming more commoditized.
No, I think it's absolutely a big valuable asset that is, in fact, at least since I've started, we've been really focused on integrating that more and more and deeper with the other services that we provide. You know, you kind of touched on the TikTok experience. It's I'm going to, at the risk of dating myself and being a bit of a nerd, but I go back to the movie Gattaca, when he comes home and the TV jumps on and sort of the TV just starts playing, gives him the mentions when he was in the news and what was on the news, and kind of just a rundown, a personalized rundown of what the day looks like. And that kind of reminded me on it. You know, it's a little bit on a TV type experience, lean back. It's probably a little different than swiping up and down or going through a feed. But I could definitely see that this is something where it's going. And also, it's not only sort of the type of recommendation, I think, that consumers are out, you know, because you watch this, you might like this, but also spot trends, you know, use external data sources that are perhaps not media and entertainment related to influence, you know, what you're watching, etc. We also find that it has good value in composing catalogs and composing channels and composing experiences for consumers, not only on the content side, but sort of the overall experience. You know, what should we present this user with or this consumer with?
Absolutely. And just going back to what you said previously about, you know, bringing your experience in security to the table, you know, can we expect sort of security updates or new product launches from 24i in the coming weeks or months? And, you know, talking about how personalization has been core to what 24i has been doing the last couple of years, can we expect security to mm-hmm. become core to what you do in the next few years?
I mean, security, you know, from our perspective, as it relates to the content, absolutely. You know, we work with the usual suspects out there. It's kind of interesting for me too, to see a little bit of the other side of the story, right? Where I was sitting in one seat, and now I'm sitting in a seat where I get insights into sort of the whole field, which is kind of nice. You know, what we are focused on is really, so let me back up a little bit. The reason, going back also, what excited me about 24i personally, you look at, you're intimately familiar, I think, with sort of the M&A that's been going on at 24i over the last couple of years. You mentioned the filter. There was also Nordia, then obviously the Amino story. And when I look at the overall product portfolio and the composition of the customers that 24i has, it's super interesting to have a really solid set of customers that are your content owners, maybe sometimes niche or specialized content creators that want to run and get up and running very fast, a direct-to-consumer streaming service. And then you have on the other side, your traditional pay TV owner, pay TV operator that owns the network, is all in the infrastructure and really in the bits of how is the video encoded, how do we deliver it, what do the pixels look like when they come out on the other device. And it's kind of nice that 24i is really sitting in between those two market segments, or I shouldn't say in between, is really operating in both of those market segments. And so I believe, you know, what you'll see from us is very much going to be around aggregation, syndication. Those are the problems, like you said, you know, what you experienced at Connect TV. That's what the pay TV side is after. What's also interesting is on the D2C streaming side, you know, we see a lot of fast launching services, and then they get really into the complexities of customer acquisition, the cost behind that. Costs to acquire customers on social media are ever so increasing. How do we actually, and then we're competing against these 10 apps that everybody has installed that are next to each other, maybe even more. In fact, I think a recent TiVo report or last year, I was even citing that in the US, consumers have now subscribed to north of 10 streaming services or 10 services, subscription services on top of probably a solid internet subscription. But then you look at what their challenges are, and their challenges are much less the, okay, how was the video delivered? Obviously that needs to work, but it's also about, you know, how do I even monetize my content? Is subscription the right way to go? Should I be syndicating that content to somebody else from my platform? So that's really the interesting stuff. And you'll see things, launches around products geared towards that.
All right. You know, when I asked you about whether you'd identified any gaps in the portfolio since you arrived, that was kind of a trick question because I can identify one kind of because, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, one of your main rivals, Exceedo, just a couple of weeks ago, acquired Easel TV. And that's a smaller developer of TV app experiences with a strong focus on AI-based processes and automation features for, you know, kickstarting app launches. And that deal is set to bring some major efficiencies to Exceedo, which is a, you know, a much bigger company than 24i. And, you know, in the years to come, you know, it probably allows Exceedo to implement more automation into the CMS and some of the creative processes, and that will inevitably lead to some workforce cuts. And I interviewed the respective CEOs of Exceedo and Easel TV at the time of that deal, and the consensus was really that, you know, there's too many players in this space, and, you know, consolidation is just inevitable, and it just happened that Easel TV and Exceedo were a good fit. But do you think 24i maybe missed a trick in not acquiring Easel TV? Because I say that because both companies have offices just down the road from me in the small English city of Bath. I'm here in Bristol, so.
I think it's going to be interesting how that plays out. I think it's going to be interesting what they combined bring to market, what the new product portfolio looks like, how that's going to shape up. It's very much on the app side, right? And so one of the things that I actually noticed, and I wouldn't say necessarily that it's a gap that we have in the product portfolio, it's actually an opportunity. A lot of the market, or most of the market, thinks of 24i as sort of an app developing company. They make the shiny UI and sort of that. The fact actually is that a lot of our customers, especially the bigger ones, they are using our backend services and they're building their own UX on top of it. So we have actually focused, and since I've been here sort of over the last 9 months, really focused on things like how do we actually make APIs that the filter provides more accessible to customers that are using our direct-to-consumer streaming stack, to customers that we have acquired, for example, with Nordia, that is now our focus on product. So I really am focused on this convergence of the technologies that the company has, making those connected, connecting those in a unified way, and then making all of these features available to the customers that are on there, whether it's pay TV or whether it's D2C. So that's one thing where, I think I want to de-emphasize a little bit the UI. I think the UI is important, but really nice experience and discovery, et cetera, happens when you have really solid, scalable backends and super rich metadata. And you can actually go manage that, whether it's content management or application layout management features, you have a good set of those.
Okay, so is that where most of the job cuts recently have come from then? That's on the UI development side.
I wouldn't say that it's tied primarily to that. One of the things that I've noticed is that it was a lot of very custom approach to delivering work or to delivering for our customers. And actually, the opportunity there is once we started to bring customers on a real productized version of things, we can be much more efficient. And we actually go roll out now features faster to more customers, get faster adoption, and we're getting good feedback on that as well. I think just like many companies in the market, we've obviously recently focused on sort of, really moving towards efficiency, and also taking a productized approach. I think that's really one of the major drivers of that.
Sure, and advertising has been one of the recent, you know, focuses. And you know, one of the conversations we were having last time out with Dr. Foster was kind of around FAST. You know, it's not an acronym I love, free ad-supported streaming TV, but there's a market there, so we're going to talk about it. And at the time, 24i had just teamed up with Amagi to deliver the content recommendations, the personalization, and the analytics for providers of FAST channels. And I know there's been a strong focus, as we've already talked about, on working with clients to design user experiences to accommodate FAST channels and deliver FAST channel recommendations. And so how is that strategy paying off, you know, 12 months since we last spoke to 24i? Because, you know, the fast channel format is a lot more popular in the States than in Europe and other parts of the world. But as I understand it, most of 24i's customer base is in Europe, right? So what's the strategy there? Are you actively targeting the US market? And what's the kind of next stage of that product development?
I love that question, because that goes really back to also what really attracted me personally. It was, we've got all these customers over here in D2C streaming, all these customers over here in pay TV. I think FAST is very interesting in Europe as well. I think the US is a little bit further ahead in terms of integrating that. For us, we've done a lot of work, like you said, with Amagi. We've actually launched channels on UK Virgin Media. I don't know if you have that, but you could go zap through there and try to figure it out. And it's, in my mind, sort of this first step, perhaps a very small step, into connecting the dots, getting the two segments to actually integrate with each other in a unified way. And maybe the FAST channel eventually will turn from, I don't know, right to left to top to bottom. I don't know if that works on a TV screen, but hopefully you get what I mean by that. So that is actually going really well. We've done a very fast iterative implementation together with Amagi and UK Virgin Media. We have, and it's pretty tricky, right? It's not like, oh yeah, you just stitch a bunch of channels together and then you feed them in there, because you have to actually make it work on not just one type of set-top box, not just one type of device or model. You have to make it work across what customers have in the field, or what the pay TV operator has in the field. In the case of Virgin Media too, multiple devices, multiple device classes, different models, a little bit of different UX. So we've really spent a good chunk of time evolving the software to be able to accommodate that, and to be as closely aligned to the performance that a linear channel would have. To, you know, when you're zapping through the guide and you cross one of those fast channels, you have the same experience that you would have as tuning from channel 3 to 4 if it's on broadcast multicast delivery. And then advertising obviously plays a big role in that, for sure. And this is, like I said earlier, the kind of monetization opportunities that our D2C customers, our streaming customers, are really looking for to increment trying to acquire consumers or subscribers for their own services. So I think that's sort of the first validation point that we have, maybe as an industry too, that the aggregation game is happening, maybe not as fast would indicate.
Yeah, it's funny that you asked if I had Virgin Media and I could go and check this out, because I'm a cord never. I've never had a pay TV subscription. Always been a broadband only and streaming subscriber household. So you know, and if that's me and my generation, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of my friends are similar age, are in a similar position. You know, what are our kids gonna be doing, you know, in 20 25 30 years, if we're already not buying pay TV subscriptions? Yeah. So yeah, is there enough business currently at 24i to, you know, offset the inevitable loss of pay TV operator business, do you think?
Well, I don't know that there is an inevitable loss. I actually think the pay TV operator is well positioned to be that aggregator again, because they do own the network, because they do own the billing relationship. Interesting way to ask the question, but I see it actually going the other way. I actually think that there is inevitably going to be a resurgence in terms of the video consumption on pay TV. Take, for example, what's happening here in Germany. I was scrolling through my reels the other day and sure came across a small reel where somebody was comparing subscribing to Bundesliga in 2017 and 2024. And in 2017, it was sort of like internet bill, you know, that type of demographic person. Oh, 25 euros more and I'll get all the Bundesliga games. Great, check. I'll take that. Okay, it was streaming. And then fast forward to 2024 and the story goes, oh, if you want to watch Monday's game, you have to be on, you know, this provider, on Tuesday on Amazon Prime, on Wednesday on DAZN, on Thursday on RTL Plus. If it's a full moon, then you have to watch it on Super RTL Plus. And the whole bill was $1,079.25. So it's a way different world. And I think if you look at that, we're seeing the aggregation happening on the billing side. So you're paying through your OTT services against the on the same bill that you're paying for the internet, or maybe your mobile phone. Maybe you have those two from the same provider. So I think the video, maybe not as we think in the classical way, you know, multicast distribution, set-top box, that kind of stuff. But I think in terms of offering an aggregated video product, what we today call a pay TV operator, I believe is in a prime spot to get back to that.
Okay, interesting. We're probably going to have to agree to disagree at this point. But, you know, I think aggregation is a sort of on a device that the operator owns is a stepping stone to, you know, bundling on a device that the operator doesn't own, a retail streaming device like, you know, Google TV, for example. That is a step, and that in turn is a stepping stone to pay TV operators not being relevant anymore as they own less and less of the ecosystem. But, you know, going back to Virgin Media, you mentioned that, and I've scribbled a note here that that was a launch of 15 FAST channels. And, you know, everyone's got to start somewhere initially, but in terms of the broader FAST conversation, that's kind of, you know, that's bottom feed, isn't it? 15 FAST channels. You know, you need to have a lot of these to make them a bunch of channels bringing in a small amount of revenue to make them financially sustainable, no?
You know, so there's obviously thousands of channels out there that you could have. And I would say the important part there is to pick the ones and not to pick 1,000 because you will, you know, lose subscribers or consumers or viewers within the noise. So, you know, from my perspective, the what you touched on earlier, sort of using the filters technology or what we call 24IQ today, recommendation technology to build these channels, to actually go influence where that channel shows up, how that channel is showing up. That's really driving the value of the ad inventory. So it's not necessarily about volume. It's about putting the right channels in front of the right consumers with the right monetization behind it. The other aspect to that that's really crucial is privacy. So things like integration with consent management, integration with, you know, or showing the consumer the value that they can receive for opting in for some data collection that can make the channel better, that can make the advertising more relevant. That's the other crucial piece in that. So I think when you put that all together, it's not about do you have 100,000 channels, but do you have those, you know, 50 channels that make sense to have for that set of audience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could do a whole separate series of podcasts on that topic. Yeah. But you know, I wanted to mention Amagi is a strong company in the broadcast space, but you know, fundamentally it supports broadcasters and the advertisers, and I've heard from, you know, rivals that there is an argument that Amagi doesn't bring any value to, you know, pay TV operators. And, you know, maybe that's an argument to have another day, but that got me thinking, you know, surely there's a way for a company like 24i to maybe cut the Amagi middleman out of the equation and make more money and have more slice of the pie.
You know, where's the content coming from? So I'm actually more interested in making the connection, facilitating the exchange, again, than sort of dealing with the actual bits of the video content and where it's coming from. So if somebody actually has already a nicely prepared library that's sitting there ready for consumption, I want to work with that. That gets us to market much faster. We can start monetizing that much faster as opposed to having to build the library from scratch, et cetera. So whether it's Amagi or, you know, others in this space, Frequency comes to mind, World comes to mind, you know, happy to do business with everybody. It's about the exchange. And in this case, actually, some of the content is coming directly from our D2C, from our streaming customer base. that we run their direct-to-consumer service for.
Okay, we'll pick up that conversation at NAB, I think. And speaking of NAB, a trip back to 2023 in Las Vegas, where you unveiled a modular system under the 24i Mod Studio portfolio. And this was designed to open up new revenue streams for broadcasters by taking content direct to consumer, including the 24i Broadcaster Studio. That's about, you know, that covers the apps, the cloud-based video processing, the content security, the EPG restart, catch-up support, and the personalization features, all of which we've touched on briefly. So against that backdrop, what have you got in store for us at NAB Show 2024?
Top secret.
Ah, you can't leave me hanging like that.
I'm kidding. No, look, I mean, you'll see more on the fast side from us. We look at that as a first proof point of aggregation is working. And that syndication, not just the aggregation on the operator side, like I talked about, but really the syndication, right? How do we get the streaming content over into that space again, or more so? So you'll see a lot more of that. And then perhaps you'll hear a little bit about, although I would hint at that more so at the IBC timeframe, about evolution of that, let's call it content exchange. For now.
Okay, so no big M&A deals we can expect.
Quiet.
Okay, that's a conversation I'll have to save for Donald.
Yes, and he is surely looking forward to having that.
Great. So on a final note, you know, I've got to have a shameless plug of my own. So in a couple of weeks' time, on Thursday, the 4th of April, we are hosting the inaugural Bristol Media and Entertainment Mixer, where one of your colleagues, Stuart, will be sitting on an in-person panel alongside executives from Exceedo and 3SS. So that's going to be three rivals I'll be pitting against each other on a in-person panel. And that's a totally free-to-attend event, including free food, free drinks. So for anyone in and around the Bristol area, you know, or even London, it's only an hour and a half on the train from the capital. So head to our website or our socials to find a link to that event. I'm not expecting you to be there, Sebastian. It's a bit of a trip from Munich to Bristol. But, you know, everything you said today, I will be using as ammunition against Stuart. So, yeah, thank you for this little warm up.
we're super excited to be there, actually. And Stuart is also excited to be there. So thank you for the opportunity and letting us participate in that, too. It's fun.
Yeah, and thanks for getting involved and being our guinea pigs. You know, this is the first event of its type in Bristol, so yes, a little bit of an experiment, but fingers crossed. So yeah, thanks for coming on, Sebastian. That was a great, you know, quick fire chat, and I look forward to seeing you in person in Las Vegas. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you, everybody.
Cheers.
Have a good one.
Bye.